Welcome to Forget the Box, the ultimate web series podcast. I'm your host slash terrible community director, Brie Castellini, and today we're talking the dreaded crowdfunding. Our anything but dreadful guest is Christina Rea, the director of crowdfunding for Seed and Spark and successful crowdfunding filmmaker in her own right. We talk crowdfunding misconceptions, best practices, and how to entice old people at the movies to donate to your campaign. No, really. Before we get to the interview, I just want to remind everybody that there's still a chance for you to win prizes such as a $250 Amazon gift card. In order to be entered to win, all you have to do is rate our podcast 5 stars on iTunes and leave a review, and then send a screenshot of that review to podcast@starable.com. Make sure you submit your review soon, because this offer ends July 10th, 2018. Hi, Christina. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So can you tell everybody a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I'm a filmmaker. I also work at Seed and Spark as the director of crowdfunding, and I run a monthly screening series called IndieWorks. I'm just sort of very embedded in the film world.
Yeah, you made 2 features. How many shorts?
12, I guess.
Oh my God.
It's hard to, somewhere sort of during school, you know.
Sure, and like, sure, sure.
It's really hard to say. I feel like some people consider shorts as like their projects the way that I consider features, you
right.
know, and mm-hmm. shorts for me are just kind of like learning experiences and ways to stay creative in between longer projects.
Sure. And you also made a web series, right?
One? Yes.
Just one?
Yeah, just one.
There's one called Kelsey.
And a pilot, but like we turned it into a short because
it
didn't really work as a pilot.
Fair enough. Right. So crowdfunding. We're talking about crowdfunding today. Basically what we're going to do is we're going to go through one of your projects, the most recent one, I assume,
sure.
About a donkey, your latest feature.
Yep.
And so we're going to go through that and sort of talk about your process, the way that you built it, the way that you built it from even before you launched the crowdfunding campaign, which is, I think, a part that people don't really understand or
right.
think about.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, I want to talk about why people should crowdfund. What are some sort of misinformation that I think people get about crowdfunding? What do you think that is?
Well, I think that a lot of filmmakers consider crowdfunding as something you have to do once. And then sort of once you've done it, somehow like doors open for you.
Mm-hmm.
And now people are like knocking on your door to make your stuff. And that's just
sure.
really not accurate. I think that, and also people think that you can only do it once, that you like
right.
have one shot to ask people for contributions and then you're maxed out. But really, I see it as a way to make the content that you want to make through the people that want to see that content and want to feel part of it. And so for me, it is audience building. It is a way to engage the people that, you know, care about my voice as an artist and enjoy the content that I put out. And I've crowdfunded 4 times, you know, and for very different projects, for 2 features and 3 shorts. And so, and they're very different genres. And so, like, for me, I understand that people are following my voice and do genuinely want to feel part of making the content that I make. And that's really, I think, what filmmakers have to embrace, is that this is part of being a filmmaker these days.
Mm-hmm.
That's like audience building. No one's going to build your audience for you.
Sure.
There's so much content out there that you have to find a way to reach people, and crowdfunding is a really great way to do that, because people feel personally invested in something before it even exists, because they helped make it happen. They made it possible.
Sure.
And so a big part of it is just like, it is a lot of work. A lot of filmmakers don't realize how much work it is.
And we'll get to that.
Yes. They don't realize that it requires prep in the way that like production requires pre-production.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to get everything organized and coordinated, and you have to have a plan, a schedule. You have to have content to put out to
mm-hmm.
engage people. There is no if you build it, they will come. So that's a big thing. And then also I think just like the mental shift of embracing the ask and sort of treating it like an offer.
Yeah.
A lot of filmmakers think that they're asking for a handout and they feel kind of guilty about that. They feel self-conscious about doing that. And And I did too when I first started crowdfunding, but I started to realize that I am offering something. I'm offering them an end product that they will get to experience and maybe even get a copy of or something. And I'm also giving them a very unique experience in creating something and being part of something. And once I sort of embrace that and realize, yeah, I'm offering, and sure, there are some people that aren't going to get it. They're not going to get that I'm offering them something and may dismiss me. For the most part, people do appreciate it and do want to join and be part of it.
Absolutely, yeah. The way that you think about your crowdfunding campaign is so much about how successful your crowdfunding campaign will be about.
Absolutely.
Nobody thinks about that.
Yeah.
So do you think that there are circumstances where people shouldn't crowdfund?
Absolutely. I think, you know, if you're making like a documentary that's sensitive to some sort of subject matter where privacy is really important, we see that a lot. Like sometimes I'll teach a crowdfunding class and someone is making a documentary that's like a political documentary in some other country, and it's like really sensitive and could have really intense consequences if they got caught. Like then I'm like, you should not crowdfund, you know?
Right. Because they don't want the attention on them before they make the film.
Yeah.
Maybe they could do a finishing funds thing.
Yeah, though. Exactly. And there are, circumstances where if you are making something where you're not, you don't feel like you're in a position to really include your audience because whatever the circumstances may be, then like, sure, don't crowdfund. But I personally think that everyone can and should crowdfund regardless of the budget, regardless of, you know, the genre, because ultimately crowdfunding is audience building and like sure. you need to do that. And so doing that as early as possible benefits you and the project.
Okay, great. So that is a good sort of segue into audience building. So Anya from our creator forum asks, how do you find your audience and connect with them in an authentic way? And I like this question because she touches on something that I think a lot of web series creators like know, but they don't know what it means, which is the authentic part. They know they can't just spam people.
Sure.
But they don't know how to not spam people. It's a balance that they're aware of and have no way of getting into. So what are the ways that you can authentically or think about authentically creating a community instead of just like using a good hashtag and tweeting a lot?
Right. So a big part of it is thinking about like what are the themes of what you're making? What are the real world relevancies of what you're making? Genre is always a good place to start. But my feeling is like whatever you're making, you're probably also a fan of that, mm-hmm. whether it's the genre or the subject matter or whatever. And so start with like your own behavior and how you interact, how you express your fandom of something, and then engage with people. You know, like I love horror movies, and my first feature is a horror film, and I crowdfunded that. And a big part of what I did was like join a bunch of fan groups online and just like talked naturally and authentically about like what I love and started building relationships. And eventually the time came where I was able to reach out to people, those people that I'd met through those experiences, with my own project as like an authentic fan and mm-hmm. say like, I know what you want out of the genre, and here's how I'm meeting that need and that desire.
Sure.
And so that's like a way to do it. But also, you know, if you're doing anything that's like social issue relevant, then you want to look for people online that are talking about those social issues and start jumping into conversations. So it's about like not shouting out into the world and asking people to pay attention to you, but rather looking for those conversations that are already happening and
Absolutely.
Jumping into those.
So what about for About a Donkey? How did you start authentically building your audience? Because that wasn't a genre film. That's a pretty straight up comedy, right?
It is, yeah. And it's a dramedy. So it's like hard too, because it's not like a laugh out loud.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like a quirky drama, mm-hmm. I guess, is what you're supposed to call dramedies these days. I don't know. That was interesting because it was coming off the heels of like multiple projects for me.
Of course.
So to some degree, it was targeting my existing audience.
Okay.
I had a web series that was very inclusive, but the main character was lesbian. And we built a very big queer inclusive audience because of that web series. And generally, I'm like, I like to make inclusive content. And so it's just sort of natural to be inclusive in that way. But we also are very well aware that we have this audience that we want to feed. And also, like, the writer of About a Donkey and my co-producer, she's a lesbian. And like, obviously, she writes herself, you know, mm-hmm. like she wants to see herself reflected on screen. And so it is just like natural that one of the main characters in About a Donkey, actually three of the main characters in About a Donkey, but like one of the core family members is lesbian. And so like we started there to some degree with our existing audience. We also do a lot of comedy content in general. So we did start with genre, But we also started thinking about, like, what are other elements of representation? There's, you know, a grandmother character who's in her 70s, and there are two parent characters who are over 50, and, like, their love lives and, like, their relationships are a part of the film, which I don't think you see very often mm-hmm. in media. And so we did start with that as, like, a topic of reaching people.
How did you reach the over 50 romantic lovers?
Yeah, so we started on social media trying to find those older age groups. We definitely used some, like, Facebook ad targeting. But we also just, like, got out into the world. There's, like, a movie theater sort of in my neighborhood that is an indie theater, and they have, like, great matinee prices. It's like $6 to go to a matinee.
Okay.
And every time I go to a matinee, it's always, like, elderly people. And so I made it a point to talk to them, you know, and start talking to them about my project. And
so you just made friends in the audience.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Right. I mean, that's, like, because they're my age, like, target age. Mm-hmm. They obviously like independent films.
Sure.
You know, they go to them during the day. And they, like, I feel like at a certain age, you know, they have time and money to spare. And
sure.
So that was part of, yeah, my, like, strategy. And I felt like I was authentically reaching out to them because it was, like, it was their interest. I wasn't just sort of, you know, reaching out to people of a certain age just on the street, mm-hmm. but it was, like, very targeted in that way.
So how did you approach people? I'm fascinated now. Like, this is all I want to talk about. This is what the podcast is now. Is I want to know, like, okay, so I'm an older person that you're sitting next to in a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
Did you decide to sit next to me because you're like, they might like my movie? Or is it just, like, you happen to be sitting next to somebody? How does this start?
It started more like I made it a point to go to the movies more during that, like, time
sure.
window, you know. And I wouldn't sit next to people because I felt they were usually empty theaters. You know,
okay.
There were like 12 people in the theater. So I wasn't, right. That would be really weird to sit next to someone. It's like when you're on the bus or something and someone sits next to you and there are so many seats open. It's just a weird thing to do.
Sure. Okay, so I'm a person in the audience.
Right.
What do you do?
So I would usually I would get there early so I could maybe, like, be online and to start talking to someone who's in front of me or behind me. Similarly, after the movie's over, the bathroom is, like, when people love to talk about what they just watched.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would go to the bathroom after and, like, wait for someone to say something, like, an older woman would sort of ask her friend what she thought of that, like, her husband. Usually it was couples.
Mm-hmm.
And say, like, oh, what did you think? Or they would share an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're very vocal about their opinions. And then I would say something. I would agree or I would disagree. Or I would sort of try and create a conversation that was based on, like, something I could actually say. And so it wasn't
sure.
just like, hey, I'm making a movie.
Right.
You know, it was.
But then as you went into it, you
yeah.
would, like, so, oh, yeah, so what do you do?
Right, exactly.
Person I've now had a full conversation
exactly,
with.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
And I would try and I would have, like, repeat people because it was sort of the same general group of people going pretty regularly. And so I would try to create an actual relationship with some of them so then I could reach out to them when I was crowdfunding.
Wow.
And so that wasn't like the majority at all of who contributed,
sure.
but it was definitely a percentage. And even, like, beyond that, these are people that will hopefully watch the film, you
right.
know, regardless of whether or not they contributed. And so now I have, like, contact information for outreach when we are on VOD and stuff like that. And so that was a big thing. But then other things, it was just, like, getting out into the world and trying to engage people at events and stuff. It was definitely a much broader, because the film is an ensemble, a very large ensemble. We do have a lot of target audiences
sure.
within the film. Something I'm realizing now as we're on the festival circuit, that there's, like, we just screened in Georgia, for instance, at the Georgia Film Festival, and I was testing out Facebook ads, and I realized that there were a lot of people in Georgia who own horses and were just interested in the movie because of the title. And so, like, that's not something I even considered during our crowdfunding campaign, but now I, like, know that I should have.
Sure.
Even though the donkey is, like, a MacGuffin, it's, like, not really about the donkey.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the people around the donkey.
Right.
But still, like, there is a donkey in the movie, and that is interesting to people who, like, you know.
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah, animals, and particularly, you know, donkeys and horses and such. And so that, so yeah, I tried to, like, hit different bases.
Sure.
But also with my own audience, something I do every time I crowdfund, I have an email list, like a very very robust email list. And every time I collect an email address, I make note of where I got it mm-hmm. and what the circumstances were. Like if they just handed me their card or if we talked about something, if it was a specific project of mine that they watched at a festival. And so when I'm crowdfunding, I take my email list and I try to take those people and divide them into interest points of what I'm currently making. So, you know, maybe I met someone at a festival screening of my first feature, which is a horror film, but maybe we talked about something that I can find as like related to about a donkey. And I tried to do that so that when I was reaching out to people, it was in a very personalized way, mm-hmm. even if it wasn't like someone I knew very well and I couldn't really say that it would 100% interest them. I at least could say like, I know these things about you.
Sure.
And I think those apply to this.
Yeah, this isn't just a mass email.
Right.
Okay. So that's something that I definitely want to talk about. We'll talk about email in a little bit, but like, to reach an audience authentically, you have to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
And how much time would you say that you spend just on, before you reach out to anybody, just organizing people that you know, people that you've met into like these sort of segments? How much time do you think you spend on that?
I mean, it's a lot of time. As far as the email list goes, like that, I've got down to just a template. You know, so it changes based on the project I'm working on, but generally that's just like a day where I'm sitting there devoted to that spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. But there's so much, it's like months of prep mm-hmm. because you need to collect data about your audience. And, you know, if you watch the Seed and Spark crowdfunding class, we talk about like questions you should ask your audience in order to find sort of commonalities and ways to reach people, but also like very unique points of interest. And I do that, you know, like when I was prepping for About a Donkey, I also shared the synopsis on my Facebook and I asked friends to comment if they genuinely were interested in that. And then the ones that commented, I asked them a series of questions to try and collect information about like what social media platforms they use, you know, what news articles they read, you know, what kind of music they like, what they do with their spare time. And so I could start finding ways not only of how to reach them, but also how they like to be spoken to. And so that was like a ton of prep to collect all of that information. And yeah, I mean, it's so much. When I was crowdfunding my first feature as well, this was before Seed and Spark existed, I had been in a horror film analytical course in college. And so I reached out to all of those students and asked them where they got their news about horror films. Mm-hmm. And through them, I found like 35 different sites and blogs that I had never heard of. And I spent a lot of time reaching out to those sites and blogs in very personalized ways because I was like, okay, your readers like your site for these reasons. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you those reasons in what I'm making.
Sure.
And I got a ton of coverage, but that was a lot of time because mm-hmm. I wasn't sending like blanket press releases. I was yep. sending a personalized email to every single one mm-hmm. and then having like a correspondence with them and trying to turn it into more than just like an article that features us, but like a Q&A or, you know, something that was more personal for me because I think that hooks your audience as well.
Absolutely. So when you're sending emails to all of these segments, do you like literally personalize every single one? Is there ever a circumstance where you send like an email that is understood as many people are getting this, even if you BCC them? Like, is there a circumstance where you do one of those like one email to 50 people?
No.
Really?
I will do a newsletter, like to my sure. newsletter, and that is sort of a reminder after they've already gotten a personalized email. Unless they were like an early contributor, which has definitely happened where people are just like awesome and they come on board without needing that personalized outreach, but that's rare.
Okay.
I think that even if they want to be supportive, they assume like they don't have to be the one to do it. Like mm-hmm. someone else will.
Right. The and mob so they, psychology of
right,
crowdfunding.
Exactly. So they can just like that post, you know.
Sure.
But some people do. There are some people. For the most part, though, I don't. Like, even if I am sending, even if I am copying and pasting the exact same email, I make sure to say hi so-and-so at the top that
sure.
is that person.
Okay.
Because I think that people respond to that much more.
They do. They yeah. definitely do. Cool. All right. I think we've kind of covered audience building. The only thing I will say is for people that you don't personally know, and this is probably going to be more social media based, like mm-hmm. audience reaching, how do you get people excited about giving you money before you've made anything? So obviously About a Donkey, you had an existing fan base,
right.
but back when you were doing Summit, like how did you get people, even though you know you were friends with them, like we can be friends and that doesn't mean I want to give you money.
Mm-hmm.
So like how do you get people excited about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely hard early on. And that was actually my second crowdfunding campaign. I crowdfunded for a short
oh, okay.
the year before. And I learned a lot doing that because I realized, like, that's where I realized that it's so much work, you know?
Sure.
But even so, that, I don't even know if that was out, that short was out yet when I then crowdfunded Summit. I think it was, like, on the festival circuit, so okay. No one had seen it, but I used it as an incentive, I believe, sure. Early on.
But before you have a portfolio of work, and yeah. A lot of people when they're starting out, they don't, you know,
right.
Because a lot of filmmakers, a lot of web series creators in particular, they don't come from film school. So they don't even have the film school like
sure.
portfolio to show for it. They have nothing. They have a great script and an idea and maybe mm-hmm. a couple of talented friends. Like how do you get people to trust you that you're not just scamming them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, to some degree, the platform is part of that. I'm really against flexible funding because I think that people need to know that you're going to deliver on what you promise in order for you to come back and crowdfund again. So, like, Kickstarter is all or nothing, and Seed and Spark is 80%. You have to get to that because we think, like, you can make the film you've promised on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a factor. But also, it is a lot about your mission and showing that you've done the work. I think that people are more likely to trust you if they see that there's more than just you involved already.
Mm-hmm.
So I always say, if it's your first time making something and you're going to crowdfund, like, attach your cast, attach more people,
mm-hmm.
be able to show off their work, show off your actors' reels, show off your cinematographer's reels. If you can, shoot some test footage or even just, like, anything that shows that you know how to, like, set a tone and like, make a thing, you mm-hmm. know?
Even if it isn't the quality that
exactly.
you're hoping to get to
exactly.
after the crowdfunding.
But, like, that mixed with your passion and mission
mm-hmm.
in a pitch video and just, like, showing that you've done the work, you know,
mm-hmm.
showing that you've secured your locations or you are securing your locations and
yep.
you have all of these things set in place and all you need is the funding.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really how you do it. And honestly, people, if you show that you're working hard and you're doing it and you have passion, people will get behind you. Will they get behind you a second time if you didn't deliver? Probably not. And so
sure.
that's really making sure that you deliver. Because if you do it once and you don't, you really can't come back.
That makes sense.
And
so let's talk about building the campaign. And the first one I want to talk about is to let you talk about Seed and Spark a little bit. Because Seed and Spark is one of the only crowdfunding platforms specifically for filmmakers, right?
Yeah.
Is there another one?
No, not that I know of. I know that there, if there is, they're like not on anyone's radar.
Sure.
Because I would have heard of it.
So like the three big ones for projects are Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and Seed and Spark.
Correct.
GoFundMe's in there, and I've seen people run crowdfunding
yeah.
campaigns on GoFundMe, and it's a very bizarre world.
It's weird. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. So let's stick to those
yeah.
three, but
sure.
specifically let's stick to Seed and Spark. So
sure.
what is unique to Seed and Spark, especially for filmmakers?
Right. Okay. So it is a platform by filmmakers for filmmakers. We are committed to kind of creating opportunities for filmmakers to build their careers. We're trying to fix what we think is broken in the independent film world, and that's that filmmakers have no ownership and no transparency on either sort of the funding or the streaming side. You know, in order to get your film made in a traditional way, it involves like giving up your IP and hoping that you get some sort of deal that will get you awareness, but like there's very little money trickling down.
Sure. So how is it different from Kickstarter? I mean, tons of successful film projects have been funded on Kickstarter and Indiegogo.
Yeah.
So why is it different from those?
So part of it is, you know, it is film focused. So our audience is specifically interested in independent film.
Right.
I would say that Kickstarter and Indiegogo, but especially Kickstarter, most of their audience base is coming in for like tech related
mm-hmm.
stuff. So you're sort of weeding through, whereas I think there's a little bit more discoverability on our platform. And hey, I crowdfunded twice on Kickstarter successfully, and I liked the platform. Like, if Seed and Spark didn't exist, I would be using Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
But I switched platforms before I started working for the company because I really loved the ability to target your audience and kind of carry them over from project to project. Our platform is like creator focused, so you know, people follow your user profile and then they get notified when you launch a new campaign. And so
mm-hmm.
like carryover from project to project is built into the platform in a way that doesn't exist on the other platforms. And then there's so many other perks involved, like we're the only platform that gives you personalized feedback. So every single campaign comes in, gets personalized eyes on it, and they get, you know, actual bullet points of like how to improve their pitch video. And mm-hmm. that's part of my job at the company.
Yeah, it's you and Jerry, right? Yeah. So there's two people Seed and Spark who look at every single campaign.
Correct, yeah.
And so you actually have done that for, I think, two of the projects that I've funded on Seed and Spark. And it's been really great. Is there a circumstance where you've ever like said, I don't think you should be on this platform? Like, because it is an approval process. You can't go live on the site until you at least address one or two of the notes, right?
Yeah. So, you know, we don't ever turn anyone away unless they're coming in with something like offensive, like terribly hateful, you know, like against our general inclusion parameters. Mm-hmm. But we will try and maybe scare some projects away if they're being unrealistic. Like they come in with $1 million goal mm-hmm. and we try to talk to them about their numbers and why they don't make sense. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, I can raise it. And it ends up being a back and forth where we don't budge and then they just stop responding.
Sure.
That's generally the only time, you mm-hmm. know.
And they can still go live on the platform. You're not stopping them. You're right. just being really realistic.
Right, exactly. And so you do have to, you don't have to take all of our feedback, but you do have to show that you're willing to collaborate with mm-hmm. us and like that you understand that what our feedback is based on so much data that we collect that we're very transparent about. You know, we have the highest success rate in the industry, which is twice any other platform. And it was 75% up until this year. It's now 85%. That's because we are collecting all this information and really trying to get filmmakers to understand, A, the work that goes into it, and also mm-hmm. just like being realistic about what their network reach is when they start out.
So let's talk about that then. So we're building the campaign. How do you set a budget? Like, is there a science behind it based on people you know, based on like, you know, your total budget? Mm-hmm. What goes into making that number?
You know, it varies, but I have a formula that I like to tell people. So on average, 30% of a team's network is going to contribute.
Okay.
And 30% is also a sweet spot for crowdfunding where strangers feel comfortable getting involved. So you want to get to 30% immediately, essentially, within the first week. And $25 is the most common contribution. Now, that varies depending on the affluency of your network.
Sure.
Maybe that's higher for some people, but on average, it is $25. And so I always tell people to take 30% of their email list, multiply it by 25, and that number should equal 30% of their goal at minimum, because you need your audience, your existing audience, to get you to that sweet spot for strangers to feel comfortable getting involved.
Right.
If it does not, your goal is too high.
Okay.
And so that's really a good starting point that I tell people. Sometimes, you know, as I said, some people, they end up having, you know, people, the average is $50 or $100. And so they don't need quite as much of their email list mm-hmm. to equal that. But that's where I say to start. If your goal is too high for your current network, then just raise for pre-production or just raise for production, and you can come back for post, you can come back for distribution, you can come back for festivals and deliverables, mm-hmm. all of that. Like, we've seen people do, you know, up to six campaigns for one project.
Wow.
When they're raising like, you know, $250,000
sure.
overall, you know, mm-hmm. but they can't do that in one campaign.
Right.
Or even less, you know, like it really is where you're starting. If it's your very first project, maybe that makes the most sense, because honestly, nothing builds your audience like a crowdfunding campaign. You need to quadruple your audience, run a small campaign, because that momentum is what will get people excited. I can do all the audience building in the world and I may reach some people, but if I want to really like see results, I run a campaign and my audience.
It's funny that incentivizing people to give you money is what makes them want to watch your content. Like,
yeah.
What goes into that psychology? Because I think most people assume it's the opposite, that if you're asking for money, people will be less likely to like, you know, give a crap, even if you're doing a really good job.
Right. I think it's because there's an exclusivity of like, you get to be in on this early on. You get to claim a sort of metaphorical ownership over it. It's a limited time offer, because once the thing is made, you can't suddenly buy into that.
Right.
You know? So it's like now or never.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think people watch the thing get made. They feel like they made that happen. And so they feel personally connected to it in a way that they would not if you had just like offered them the opportunity to watch it.
Sure.
Something I found fascinating about my own experience with filmmaking is it is really hard for me to get someone to pay $2.99 to rent my film. But that same person will give me $50 for a crowdfunding campaign.
Wow.
Yeah. They don't value watching content, paying to watch content, because they're so used to like having Netflix where they have, you know, thousands of titles for $11 a month, and Hulu and all of these other streaming platforms. And so, like, a one-time rental, movie rental, like, is not part of their life anymore to some degree. Like, pay-per-view is not a thing anymore, you know? But crowdfunding is, like, exciting because it makes them feel good, I think. And yes, like, getting to watch the movie eventually is part of that, but that's sort of not the incentive.
But what was exciting for them initially was just helping get it made.
Exactly. That's so interesting. Because it's, like, the 2 hours or, like, the hour and a half that they have to devote to, like, watching it is just... is not compelling to them, but giving money to help create it is.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right. So I think I'm going to skip over some of the, like, the really granular stuff, like how to make a good pitch video, how to make good perks, because I think there's resources on Seedenspark about that. There's resources on Stareable about that. Yeah. A lot of it provided by Seedenspark folks. So I don't think that we need to go into that, because I think that the more interesting conversation that not enough people have is just about the culture of crowdfunding.
Sure.
And so somebody brought up in the Stareable forum, Ron Valderrama brought up the idea of crowdfunding fatigue. He talked about how he personally gets fatigued just seeing all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something that also people are worried about. Even when they know that that it's a mindset thing, they look at their Facebook feed and there's like 12 people crowdfunding.
Right.
So how does one person kind of get over everyone else's crowdfunding fatigue?
Right. I mean, that it all comes down to audience targeting and remembering that while, yes, filmmakers are also consumers and maybe fans of your content, they should not be the majority of people you're reaching out to because they see so many crowdfunding campaigns.
Okay.
But, like, my family members don't see any other crowdfunding campaigns. They see mine. But, like, they're not friends with a bunch of filmmakers and seeing crowdfunding campaigns all the time. I think that in our world, it is, like, it's overwhelming.
Sure.
But it's not in most people's world. I think
That's true.
They are maybe overwhelmed by, like, GoFundMes for medical bills, which is, like, a whole other issue.
Yeah.
You know? And that's horrific. But, like, that's not the same as what we're doing, you know? And so I think that it is thinking outside of your own network and trying to reach people beyond other filmmakers. Absolutely a lot of my contributions came from other filmmakers such as yourself. Mm-hmm. Thank you for contributing to my campaign.
You're welcome.
But
I love my personal email.
Thank you. But yeah, you know, like, I give to tons of campaigns, you know, but it's also hard because I help launch, like, literally hundreds.
Right.
I can't contribute to every single one that I help launch because I would be out of money, you know?
But going back to fatigue, don't promote to artists exclusively.
Yeah, exactly. They should see your campaign, but don't, like, understand that they're seeing so many.
Sure. What about, so I think another thing and something that struck me is, so I was involved in a couple of crowdfunding campaigns last year that were in wildly different demographics from me. Like, one of them was for, primarily for women over 40, like mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And that crowdfunding campaign was very successful because the people that we were targeting had more money. You know, they aren't millennials. They don't have student loans. And then thinking back to, like, when I was crowdfunding for my stuff, it was very different because people were like, I don't think I have $10. I can maybe give you $5. And so that's obviously a huge divide. And I also think that people in our generation, the younger generation, even if they aren't artists, tend to know more artists just because, like, that's what our generation is doing. So how do young people combat that then when they know that at least their initial sort of friends and their initial audience, whether they are fans or not, like, are going to be a little bit harder up for cash?
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely hard. What I always try to do is turn those people into my amplifiers. And so it's like, you know, you maybe can't give $10, but do you know someone who can? It's like, I'm sure you, if you shared it, if you asked someone directly, like an older relative or friend, maybe they could give $10.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really, I try to incentivize people to share.
How? Because, like, obviously crowdfunding perks, it's like, oh, I could get a funny Photoshop thing of myself or whatever. How do you incentivize people just to share?
So I do try to, I'll usually have, like, an incentive that I'm not offering to contributors that is something, and that is what I'm offering to people who can only share it. And maybe that's just, like, a shout-out. You know, like, everyone gets a shout-out who contributes, and you will also get a shout-out.
Okay.
Because you've, like, you indirectly contributed, you know?
Okay.
And, or, you know, if you get someone, if you if you literally get someone to contribute on your behalf, then you both will get that incentive of that level, that a dollar amount.
How do you communicate that? Because that's like, that's a lot of explaining to people, right. Especially when there's all this language going around about which is your crowdfunding campaign in general. How do you explain
it's
that?
Following up. So initially, it's just that the initial ask offer.
Sure.
And then how they respond determines how I respond. So if they say that they just don't have the money right now, then that's when I counter with like the alternative options.
Okay. So don't give everybody the information all at once?
No, yeah, don't.
Okay.
Also, I feel like if you know someone has money, don't give them an out. Like, don't be like, if you don't have the money.
Sure.
Or, you know.
You don't want to put that in their heads.
Yeah, because like that's not an option for them. That's an option for, you know, my broke college friends. Like that's not, you know. Of course, if they choose not to, fine. But this is something I learned also when I was crowdfunding for Summit. I would ask people to contribute $10. Like, if all you can give is $10, that's really appreciated. And people would give me $10. When I did not use a dollar amount, I got higher contributions. And from those same people, like in my next campaign. And so I realized that if you put a cap, then they're going to meet that cap. If you make it more open-ended, then you will be more surprised.
It's also sort of like that psychology of people wanting to contribute to your crowdfunding campaign but not pay the $2 on video on demand.
Right.
It's the way in which you prime people.
Right.
It's all psychology.
Exactly. Exactly. And I would and I would also say, like, I would do my outreach and I'd say, you know, we have some great incentives, like, and what I would say in that email was what I thought their affluency was. Like,
okay.
I would say you get a copy of the film at $25 if I thought they could give me $25. But if I thought they could give me $100, I would say, like, whatever that incentive is.
Okay. So that's where the personalization comes in.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
And I would and that was usually effective. Like, I would usually get what I expected or more, you know? But I got far less people giving less than $25, not stating a dollar amount, than when I was just asking for $10, saying, like, even just $10 would make a huge difference, you know? 50 was the most common contribution for my last campaign.
Wow. What were you offering at 50?
We were offering a jingle, a personalized thank you jingle. And on top of the other stuff, like the copy of the film and all of that.
Sure, sure, sure.
But that was
like a GarageBand backing, and then you just like rap or something
over
it?
Well, Kelsey, we would just like on the spot, she would come up with a little thank you for that person's name.
That's so cute.
Yeah, and we shared them on social, and they were very popular. It was like a very popular thing that, because people like that personalization, and it makes them feel special, and of course they share it, and so then people were like, why is someone singing your name? They clicked the link, and yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So let's do some lightning round things right now, because I think there are some logistics that are worth getting out. So my first lightning round tip is no physical perks unless it's a much higher level.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you? Lightning fact.
Don't equate contributions to like how much money people spend on coffee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Make sure to update people even after the campaign is over.
Yes, absolutely. Utilize your team members. Do meet the cast videos. Do, you know, meet the crew videos. Utilize the people around you. That's how you reach beyond your network.
Try to personalize perks to your theme or content.
What else? Let's see.
Share other people's crowdfunding campaigns?
Yeah, absolutely.
Become crowdfunding buddies?
Yes. That's a great way to also build your audience.
Mm-hmm.
You should absolutely be crowdfunding buddies with just like people that are crowdfunding at the same time as you, but also be strategic. If they have similar audiences as you, then that's how you create crossover.
Oh, one piece of advice you gave a couple of my projects was the first like 15 seconds of your pitch video should be either content from the thing you're making or something that you've made previously.
Yeah.
Should be filmmaking content.
Should match the tone of what you're making and show off your skills as a filmmaker. The only person who wants to see your face is your parent. If you're trying to reach your audience, you need to start with the thing, you know, because that's what's going to pique their interest. That's what's going to hook them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to show your face because people do connect with that passion and personalization, but only after they've been hooked.
Yeah. And I think that's something that a surprising number of people don't consider is like, nobody knows who you are. Nobody cares about you. They care about the thing they get to watch if they help you.
Right.
And they'll eventually like you and care about you, but not at first.
And as you said before, there is, you know, fatigue. And if they have been exposed to crowdfunding campaigns, then just seeing some random person's face on a screen is not compelling.
Yeah, the crowdfunding itself is not compelling. Right. It's what you're offering. It's what your project is going to do or make them feel or make them laugh.
If you're making something scary, you should try and scare them. If you're making something funny, you should try and make them laugh because you want to prove that you are capable of doing the thing you're pitching to them.
Right. Nope. That makes total sense. So the last thing I want to do is talk about mistakes that we've made.
Sure.
Because I think that it's important, especially when you're like an expert or you're giving people advice, it's worth being transparent about the times that you have not done something well.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason that the first two campaigns that I did failed were, one, they were on Indiegogo, and I was very lazy because I knew I'd get any money I could get, and I didn't do any prep work beforehand. I prepared to make a video that was okay, and then that was all of the preparing that I did.
So some of mine, the coffee thing that I mentioned before, I absolutely did that in my first campaign. I would say, you know, the second week of a campaign can be miserable. You kind of hit a wall, you know, you have this momentum in the first week and it's exciting and then people stop contributing. Mm-hmm. And if you have a plan, then you like have a way out of that. But if you don't have a plan, then you're just like stuck. Mm-hmm. And I felt that way in my first campaign. And I started saying things like, you know, don't buy that cup of coffee this morning, give to my campaign instead.
And that's the reason that's bad is because you're like shaming them.
Yeah,
for
you're shaming
other
them for how they spend their money, which you don't want to do. And you're implying that they have to sacrifice something in order to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I understand why psychologically you think it makes sense. Like they're going to spend $4. Why not spend it on your campaign?
Sure.
But it does not set the right tone. It does not make it seem exciting to be part of. It just doesn't like motivate anyone. It makes you seem kind of desperate. Like if anyone's giving you money based on that, it's like sad money, you know. Like, it's like they feel bad for you.
Sure.
And so I realized that wasn't working, and I shifted my tone to like join me and create something together and things like that. And that's how, you know, I made it out of that. But yeah, it's like, don't do that. And I made that mistake. Other mistakes I made, my very first pitch video for my first campaign was just me in front of my laptop with like blah audio, you know, it was just like the sound of my laptop monitor, motor going. And like, I was making a comedy and there was nothing funny about what I was doing in my pitch. And I changed it a week into my campaign. I recorded a new one and I swapped it out and I had much more success with it. The big thing is I've never had a failed campaign because I always put myself in a like failure is not an option. I'm doing an all or nothing campaign. But I failed and learned from my mistakes fast enough to recover within campaigns.
That's really important. And hopefully the things like this podcast and Seed & Spark's educational videos will help people do that as well. I think that's all I've got. So, Christina, any final crowdfunding advice or just inspiration for the folks at home?
Just remember that what you're making matters and that people care and that people will want to be part of that. And if you believe it, then other people will feel it. And so just, you know, embrace the process and understand that it can be really freeing in a way because you don't feel like anyone owns you or owns your art. No one is controlling you. But it also is, it's really empowering. Like I've built relationships with people through crowdfunding who have contributed again and again to, and like lots of money, you know, just for the experience to feel part of something. And that's really exciting as an artist to have that. And I've had relationships with audience members that have sort of informed what I choose to make next because like the fact that they are so excited about what I want to make is exciting to me.
Great. All right. Well, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like this episode, remember to subscribe to Forget the Box on iTunes and leave a kind review. If you're having trouble with what to write, let us know if you're any more interested in crowdfunding for your next project after listening to this episode. Next week, we'll hear from Ashley Clements, the star of the Emmy Award-winning web series The Lizzie Bennet Diaries, as well as the creator of the upcoming web series Sona, about all things casting, acting, self-taping, and more. As always, you can submit questions for upcoming episodes of the podcast or suggestions for future topics and guests to bri@starable.com. bri@starable.com. Until then, thanks for listening to Forget the Box, and thanks to Anna Eichenauer, @QueerGermanGirl on Twitter, for our theme music. See you next week.